sorry about the problems to start with, but obviously we planned those so that the two late people would be all right. We didn't get the microphones working, so you were all right. So we were hanging over. And it's just very bad. Let's move it up to there. Yeah, that's still good. Right, welcome to this meeting of the Scrutiny Commission for Charnwood Borough Council. There are a number of things that I would like to remind people of before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that the meeting is being recorded, and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following the meeting. Under the Openness of Local Government Bodies regulation, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phone or switch them to silent and ensure your environment is distraction free. Thank you. Right, I want to take this opportunity to express, and I am going to read out these words, because probably from you gathered from my mayoral thing, I do get very tearful very easily, so I'm going to read a script. To express my sincere condolences of the death of Councillor Jill Bolton. Jill has been a member of the Scrutiny Commission since 2019, that's here, and shortly after she was elected as councillor. She was very passionate about scrutiny and made many valuable contributions during our meetings. The impact she made during her time on the commission was vast, and I think I speak for everybody here when I say she will be truly missed, and her fellow scrutiny members, from her fellow scrutiny members and the officers she worked with. Just on a personal note, I loved Jill being part of my scrutiny group, so no matter what they were, because I could always rely on Jill to ask the questions, and she had a different and a unique way of looking at a problem. Plus, she had got the background and the confidence to challenge, and that is very important for a councillor. And not all of us have got the knowledge at the back of us, whereas Jill was, and she was a great humanitarian as well. And I will miss her. Right, item one is apologies. Are there any apologies?
We receive no apologies, Chair.
Thank you very much. Minutes of previous meetings, 11th of October 2021. Can you confirm the content and that you've received the minutes by raising your hands, please? That has been carried, and I will sign these off. Thank you very much. Item three, there's been no disclosures of personal pecuniary interest, unless you know different. Nope, thank you very much. Declaration of party whip, likewise, number to report. Questions on the scrutiny committee procedure 11.16. No questions have been submitted. The first item is item six, and it's bulky waste collection review. Theo, I'm going to call you Theo on this, although I have got your surname written down here. Written it how I would read it, but it still doesn't sound right. So yeah, please accept Theo. Thank you very much, Theo. I'm going to ask Councillor Hoff Davis to introduce this report, please. And then obviously the councillors have to ask any questions, and Theo, see I've altered that now, haven't I? If you contribute when you feel you don't be needed. Thank you very much. Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I think we've had this, you've had the report before. I think that comes on an annual basis, but if you want to continue on an annual basis, I'm not sure. But obviously it was introduced at the same time as we introduced charges for bulky waste. and what you know what Thea's come to talk to or discuss more more details this evening over the history of bulky waste collections. So other than that, I'm just happy to hand to Thea. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Thea.
Good afternoon, everyone. Once again, apologies for the short delay. So this report is just to inform members of the review that we did 2 years, as the councillor and Herbert Davies said, 2 years after the original introduction of the bulky waste charges. And this is report number 3. So we did the review 6 months after the introduction. We did one last December, 12 months after the introduction. This is the one 24 months after the introduction of the charges. I'm more than happy to answer to any questions.
Thank you very much. Councillor Popley.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
There's one very quick question regarding the fly tipping increase. How many of these have resulted in civil litigation cases? Because hopefully we're going after the people responsible for this. Obviously it's a big burden on our resources and our energy and money. So hopefully there's some recompense in the offing. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Popley, for your question. I have to say this is a different department. It's our street management department that does the investigation and the enforcement, but I'm more than happy to get back to them and ask the specifics in terms of how many of these fly tipping incidents have been followed up and there has been any compensation, because I appreciate that as part of our contract it's one of the areas that although it's included in our contract, it's one of the areas that it bears a cost, and some of them are too big for our contractors, so we have to go to third parties and that makes the cost even bigger. So I'm more than happy. I apologize, I don't have the figures, but I'm more than happy to come back with the head sports.
That's fine, Pierre. Yeah. Thank you very much for that.
Councillor Hamilton.
Thank you, Chair. Regarding to the level of the charge, I mean, I see that it seems to read that it doesn't actually fully cover the cost. So in other words, it's offsetting, it's subsidising, as it were, the actual cost of bulky waste collection. Has there any work been done as to the impact of what is the actual, if you're asking to charge a cost to be cost neutral overall, what that would actually be? And of course, if you did increase the cost, would there be a concern that it might actually result in fly tipping? So there's a kind of balance you've got to try and get, is you don't want to change people's behaviour, but you're looking perhaps, if the concept is to, for us to be cost neutral, is that something that's been looked at? Because I don't know what the thought is between the current level of charge, whether, you know, why was it set at 20 when maybe it should be 25 or 30, just say, I don't know.
Originally, as this was a service that was provided for free, we thought it was agreed in Cabinet that £20 was a good starting point in terms of charging, and then all these reviews helped towards understanding whether it's still a good value for money service and whether finding that sweet spot and that fine balance between having a service which residents can be confident in using and relying on, and then not increasing the number of fly tips above and beyond. So if it's currently, as you said, it's only offsetting part of the cost, I'm happy again to come back with you. I wouldn't like to make any speculation with the exact figure how much, based on the current uptake, the cost would need to be for per collection, per charge, the charge should be in order to fully compensate the cost of this service.
Quick follow-up question, is that something that's actually reviewed? Is that a question that's asked to what could be, what would the cost be and the impact? Because I can understand you starting with something you feel that would be acceptable, but at some point will there be a conversation as to if we're going to be cost neutral, we're thinking of, you know, looking after the cost moving forward. Is that something that will be examined in the future?
Of course, in the current financial climate, any source of income is something we should explore to maximise within reason. But yes, it will definitely be reviewed and considered.
Thank you.
Councillor Parton.
I've got several questions, Mr. Leo. The first one is, at any point, having looked at some previous cabinet meetings, was there ever any consideration to giving one free collection?
Before introducing the charges, we discussed and explored different models, and charging from the first item was the one that was chosen to be the most appropriate at the time.
Charging for the first item?
No, yes, from item number one.
Because I've read some minutes from earlier on in the year where there was discussed in some minutes that it was agreed that the first one would be free. When did that get dropped?
I would be more than happy to. I'm not aware of this type of discussion that it was agreed that the first item would be free. I'm more than happy if you can let us have the exact means.
Yeah, well,
could I bring Councillor Harper Davis in here, please?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Theo. I can remember we explored every option initially, but obviously it's 2 or 3 years ago now. Obviously, Ted, you've got the minutes there. I haven't got the minutes in front of me, but we did explore every eventuality. We didn't really want to charge residents, but we just couldn't continue in this economic climate to give the service for free. But I do recall we had conversations, but obviously as the Cabinet agreed that this was the way forward in charging the £20 for the three items.
Thank you. Councillor Parton.
To return to an earlier point regarding the number of times that circular operatives pick up bulky waste, how sure can we be that every single time they pick something up it's recorded? Because there's a location in Southfields Ward, the Victoria Street flats, where when I'm in that area I regularly see operatives probably about once a week, so that's once a week every week, picking fly-tipped waste up. And how sure can we be that every incident is being picked up and recorded? Because that's a lot of incidents and that's just in one area.
So any incident, any ticket, any job ticket that they have that they cannot find, usually they provide some photographic evidence that they were not able to find. Otherwise there is a report of the number of requests made and the number of visits that they carried out and collected the items. So we can compare the two and see if there is any instance where either the item was not presented or whether there were any access issues and the crews could not physically collect the bulky items.
It would be useful to see those figures, please.
What figures are those? Sorry, the amount of
any attempted collections that were not possible because of either items not being presented or access issues.
Okay, value of that would be what?
And also the amount that was just left and had to be picked up. That's what I mean.
Councillor Hartley.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Potman, I think you're probably referring to when we have, I think every Monday, Serco's don't charge us for this, I don't believe, Theo, do they? But we go around and collect any bulky items or left items in all of the sets of flats because of the fire risk. Whether the tallies from the collection, I don't think Theo knew quite what you were getting at. I think that's what you're mentioning. So the items that are put out in the flats, and I do remember Councillor Draco asking a question, I think, at council regarding just that. Because what actually happens is, in some situations, items are left out. And because when we go to the trial on Monday, but they do that, really out of the goodness of the hearts, don't they, to collect those items. And if it's only one day per week they can collect, they can't always get in. So So that's when the issue occurs. I think that's probably the differential between the numbers we know and the numbers we don't, whether it's a tenancy that notifies Serco or virus, or whether it's incidental through Serco, I don't know.
Again, that's helpful.
There would be good figures to know, though.
Thank you very much, Chair. As Councillor Haberdelli said, we have this service. It's an SLA with the housing, so housing pays for it. So they pay for the time of the operatives. So every Monday, our officers that are responsible for the areas, if they identify any health and safety risks, they notify Serco and they go and collect everything. It happens to be every Monday, which is the day of the bulk collection. Yeah, it used to be bulk collection, now it's a Saturday. But it's every Monday is when it takes place from ground sports, from areas that are known for attractive.
Charmed house.
Yes.
Yeah.
Charmed house.
Okay.
And the last point is that there's mention in the report about how one of the things that possibly kept fly tipping down was the fact that once, as people were more at home during the 18 months of the pandemic, but the restrictions had been lifted and household waste centres were reopened again, albeit on a booking, that there was the ability to go to the tip there. But it's got to be differentiated. Still not a lot of people take bulky waste unless they've got a trailer or a very large car and a van. So the report could maybe say that fly tipping was down because people were taking bulky waste, but that probably wasn't the case unless they got a van or a trailer.
I'm not quite sure of your point there, and I'm sure you do. It's just I'm not quite sure what you're trying to get at there.
Okay.
Misleading. Do you mean gloss over or?
It talks in the report about how one of the things that probably kept number requests down for the bulky waste service was that people were able to take their own waste to the household recycling centres once they were reopened. But I would contest that actually what people were taking was things that they could fit in the car, not bulky waste.
Okay. Yes, it would be what people could fit in the car. But I'm not quite sure what information you want. Or how the report could be worded any differently. Because it's always been the case that people can't get rid of their bulky waste unless they have got a trailer or a vehicle. A larger vehicle. And I will always contend that if you're going to be a fly tipper, you're a fly tipper. And just because we've gone through the pandemic, if you wouldn't have fly tipped before, you wouldn't fly tip all the way through. So although the pandemic's been terrible and it's impacted on us and so on and so forth, I wouldn't necessarily think that fly tipping would go up because you'd probably been a fly tipper before, is what I'm trying to get at. It wouldn't magically turn me into, I've got a mattress here, I need to get rid of it, I'll dump it. Because that's, even if I had to cut it up in little bits and put it in the black bin, I would be preferable to doing that than putting it in the countryside. So I'm not quite sure what we could do with the wording to make it easier for.
Okay, so could we therefore, we're going to have this report in a year's time, aren't we?
Well, we're going to discuss that, whether there's a need to have a follow-up on it.
Because we agreed, didn't we, that there was data missing that could help us scrutinise it further.
Okay. Well, we'll see what the opinion of the group is in a minute. Was there any more questions on this? I've got several. Thank you. Oh, sorry,
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Nice to meet you, Theo, and thank you for coming. Item 5, and this is on a lot of better, on the same tack as Councillor Parton, but the fact is that are we thinking, are we progressing now to actually opening our tips, I call them, permanently now without having to book? Because that's one of the questions I get asked from residents. Yeah, I know, but a lot of the elderly don't realise because they're not online. You understand where I'm just, you know, are we going to actually advertise it somewhere, even in paper fashion? But I've got a thing about this business, you go online for everything. I've got residents in my village that don't do line. They don't even touch a computer because they're in the 80s, 90s, and then there's one of 96 who actually, computer whiz. So, you know, I've got to try and appease all of them. So I know they're open, I know you have to book, but you have to still book.
But the tips are county council.
Yeah.
It's left to Shire County Council, and they have been advertised as being open.
Yeah.
But I can understand where you're coming from, but how, if somebody's not online or don't have the local paper,
yeah,
how else,
yes,
could
we,
well, we get that over,
yeah,
to them? It's got to be word of mouth. And it's got to be when they ring you up and say,
yeah,
can I go to the tip? The,
yeah,
councillor will say, yes,
yeah,
they're open,
yeah,
you can go when you want. Yes,
yeah,
Councillor Parton.
Yeah.
Sorry, Councillor Anton, was that the last?
Yes, the part is, and how in general has the pandemic actually affected the bulky waste department in general? How has that, you know, have you come out the other side?
Thank you very much for the question, Councillor. I think we have come on the other side. The only problem is that whenever we have resource challenges, it's one of the services that gets a bit of a hit. So if we have issues with frontline services, refuse waste, recycling waste, we might have to reorganize the resources, and sometimes we need to suspend for a few days. So that's the hit that currently, and with the shortages of drivers, that challenges getting sometimes even bigger. So that's the only challenge we're currently facing in terms of the pandemic and the impact.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councillor Parton.
The County Council, I'm a member of last year's County Council, to declare. The County Council published the fact that the recycling centres are open without booking in their last year's matters.
Thank you. My question is, thank you, Theo, is I can see the income generated, but I can't see how much it's costing. Am I missing that? Was it anywhere in here of how much it's costing to collect them? So this income generated, sorry, you keep going to that, and every time you go there, I should speak. The income generated, but I sort of, I don't know whether that's, you've already included the costings or not. No, I didn't think so. So I'd be very interested in that, please.
I'm covered to get back to you with the exact figure in terms of cost.
Yes, please, thank you. Because I noticed the first full year generated more than 135,000. And then it says this figure can't be used for any future forecasting purposes, as it's likely to be skewed for the prolonged closure of household waste recycling centres. That was for your first year. But your second year is a higher profit. So were you expecting that?
Simple answer, no.
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 Okay.
We wouldn't think that it would generate that much of an income in year two. We thought, as stated in the report, that the first full 12 months were skewed because of the closure of the limitations with the household recycling centres, and the income generated in year two was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, okay. My other comment really would be an operational comment. We've recently had a fly tip on one of our roads. It's quite regular, I'm sure.
Charmwood are good as gold, they really are. But today I just went to inspect, because it was inspected on Friday. Although I sent a photo, they sent somebody down on Friday to have a look at it again, just in case my photograph was lying. And I went past the cul-de-sac, and there was a lorry there, and I thought, right, I'm going to get them. And it wasn't, it was our men cleaning it up. But I've got to come back and get the tyre. And they've got to send somebody else back to get the paved tins. Because for some reason, and I asked why, and he says, I don't know, they can't pick the tyre up at the same time, and it's another department that takes the paved tins. So that fly tip has generated, if you count the 5-day inspection, five visits. Generated five visits. Now, operationally, I think that's completely unacceptable. And if you could take note of that, which I see you have done, Councillor Harper Davis. And as I say, it's nothing to do with the report. But I would be very interested, please, with the outcoming as well as the income generated. And I also am flabbergasted with the data on this. The total number of fly-tipped items, 383. But the fly-tipped items that could have been collected as bulky items was only 29 in 5 months. I can't imagine, let's just put this down to a mattress. I can't imagine in the whole of Charnwood there was only 29 mattresses. That's almost what you're saying, isn't it? Yeah.
When there is a fly tip and it gets assessed, we get a breakdown of the materials that were there. So if this report includes any electric and electrical equipment that could have been collected as part of the bulky waste, and I don't think there's a special category for mattresses. That's what I was.
I
appreciate where you come from.
Yeah, a chair, a mattress, whatever. Yeah.
So I'm happy to share the data that we get, and we get the figures of items that could have been collected as part of the bulky waste service, compared to the overall number of items collected. So probably mattress could be captured in a catch-all category of household material that is not being picked up.
I'm of the opinion that I would like to see this come back again, but I would like a little bit more detail, please. I referred to it earlier on as smoke and mirrors. And I still think it is, and I don't think we can go back to free collections, but I'm just really amazed at the fact that there's 29 out of 383 were bulky waste. So the rest was, I've got no idea, black bags and things like that, wasn't it? Yeah. And then a 12-month review, 900 fly tips items, and only 82 of them were bulky waste. And going back for the two-year review, I mean, it's obviously that's where you've got a bit of skewed information there, because it didn't go up the full 12 months, did it? So I'd just like a little bit more information on this, and come back in 1 year's time. Would the committee agree with that? Yes. And flesh out a little bit more data, please. But in the meantime, if I could have the expenditure as well as the income generated. And is it they're different pots, aren't they? Are they? They don't come out the same service?
Yes. One is the contract cost, and it's in the same cost centre. The expenditure is in the same cost centre as the income.
Okay. So it is the same class that is coming out.
I'd just like to know if that purse has got anything left in it.
Yes, it's
or
a bigger purse.
Gone out and cost
The contract cost is quite big.
Yeah.
Part of it, which we can easily identify, is we know the exact cost of each of the services, so we can find out.
Lovely. Thank you very much. And I dare say the panel that is being undertaken at the moment will look into this also. So thank you very much, Theo, for attending. And again, I apologise about... Can you say your surname?
I studied with my surname a few times, so Karadzalis it is.
Karadzalis. Yeah, no, there you go.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Right, so I've got to ask the committee. Let's go back to my script. Yes. So the commission again will review the Rorke Waite collection. It's only 6 months. I've just said a year. Shall we stick to the 6 months, or do you want to stick to a year?
The last two reports have been 12 months, Chair.
The last two reports have been 12 months. So, we stick to 12 months?
Yes, I agree, Chair.
Yeah? 12 months. I don't know why it says 12 months. And the committee all agrees with that, so we don't have to
put hands up.
No. Thank you very much. Right, item 7 is pre-discussion scrutiny for any specific financial matters to be considered by the Cabinet, and there is none. You'll be glad to hear. Item 8 is Cabinet items for pre-discussion scrutiny, and the following items have been identified. So the first one identified is Carmwood Grant, round 2, and Community Facilities Grant application. These are on page 16 of your agenda. And can I introduce Verity Graham to come and talk to us about that? If you'd like to open it up, Councillor Hoff Davis, please. Can you put your microphone on, please?
Beg your pardon. So I just want to ask you to be mindful of the reduced funding that we've had from the outset with our, obviously, with the challenged economic environment we've got. And obviously year after year we have endless rounds of support for voluntary groups, so just be mindful whilst we give the report that we have significant less money than we've probably ever had before. But I will read the notes out, and I'm sure Verity can clarify any technical questions that I'm not aware of or I don't know. So the report sets out the recommendations in relation to the Charnwood Community and the Community Facilities Grant applications that have been received in this round. The Council recognises the important role of voluntary and community sector playing support the Council to deliver our aims and objectives, and I think they've done really well. I think all the voluntary organisations have helped us, or we've helped them, and they've done a phenomenal job. So the assessment process and applicants is usually the same. The grants panel assess and score the applications against relevant grants criteria. And the panel were pleased to see a wide-ranging and diverse set of applications with a number of new organisations, which is great to see, applying for the funding that not previously applied before. So on the numbers, the Community Facilities Grant applications, there were 5 that were received in this round, and the grants panel are recommending the Corsica Community Association awarded a grant, that the Loughborough Generator Project application is deferred to a future round, and the other 3 applications recommended or decline for the reasons set out further in the report. In addition, it is recommended that a further round of community facilities grants are undertaken in February next year, recognising the large time gap between the particular rounds from round 1. Community grant applications, there were 31 that were received this time. The grants panel recommended 17 of the applications awarded a grant and 14 are declined, and the reasons are set out as the report, as you will see. Due to the large number of community grant applications received against the balance of funding remaining, which I mentioned earlier, the grants panel were able to identify the sources of funding for some projects that scored highly and are identified in the report. The applications that received funding from sources met the criteria for these. Both the Contain Fund and the Serco Environmental Grant are time limited and will not be available for any future applications. In terms of assessing applications, the grant panel looked very closely at the need of the projects, which is targeting and the breakdown of project funding to determine whether the costs are realistic and whether it duplicates any existing service provision. And the report recommended support to a diverse number of projects that will benefit a wide sector of our communities and that will support the voluntary organisation to continue to recover from the impact of COVID-19. Thank you.
Questions, please? I'll go straight to Pauline.
Good evening. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, Verity and Lee, for the report. I wanted to see it in paper in front of me, the actual facts and figures, which are very good. And I can actually say the one thing that we have, there seems to be, I know you can't actually do and give everybody everything they want, but there seems to be a certain, I just looked at some of the grants that were given and a little bit of imbalanced on the rural setting of Charnwood. So that's my personal opinion. The other thing is, we all were discussing on item 3 on page 17, what is an ambient toilet? Sorry,
I
won't have
to. I'm going to admit here, we do that. Yeah, we've already.
One that allows space for people, so it's not a disabled toilet.
You just looked it up, did you find out? It was from the south, an ambulant.
It came with the application, yeah. So we went with the application, so it's
ambulant. What is a disabled?
It's a space, it's not a disabled toilet.
No.
But it allows people that may need more space. Aren't necessarily wheelchair, but
yeah.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the report.
Thank you very much, and thank you. And it was quite explicit and quite understanding. Thank you,
Councillor Popley.
Thank you, Chair. Hi, Verity. Nice to see you again. Just one question regarding page 23.8. It goes on about the score matrix. Now, there's quite a big refusal barrier being 30 and below, but then you've got kind of a small gap to the next where you might discuss it, and then 40 over it can probably get approved. Now, in that instance, that seems that there's a vast proportion of schemes, as Councillor Branson says, that are going to get approved, which is a great thing, but it also seems that if you're in that sort of midpoint, you can fall through the gap. How is this assessed? Seems quite subjective. Can you please clarify the actual protocol behind it? Because I hate to see people miss out on actually applications that might be able to get something. Thank you very much.
So the application score process has been brought to Cabinet on several occasions for the approval of it. But the way we score it is 1, 3, and 5. So that's why there's a disparity, because if it was 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, we'd have so many. So by scoring 1, 3, and 5, it helps create a different thing. So if people are scoring very highly on certain areas, but if an area in the criteria isn't met by their application, just purely because it's not relevant, they can still score highly where it is. So it's quite complex from that point of view, because it allows somebody that is ticking a box to get a 5. If they're sort of ticking a box, they get a 3. If they're not ticking a box at all, they're not going to lose out. It tries to balance where they are. It's really complicated. I hate it when you ask me this. But it's a way of levelling it for those that do meet the criteria. So does that make sense? Sorry.
That's fine, Rosie. Thank you. It's just I understand what you're saying. And I think, yes, with all these formulae, it's quite complex most of the time. Any algorithm is. Is there a way this can be conveyed better to the public, perhaps? Because I know I'm probably not the only councillor around this table who get questions regarding these sorts of grants, and very often you have to put your hands in the air and say, well, most of the information is online, that's all I can say. But if we were in a better position to sort of inform as councillors, we might be able to help them go through these application processes from afar and say, well, we know we can't actually intervene in the process, but we are aware this is how it gets worked out. So maybe a bit more of a dialogue between us all might be a good way forward. I don't know what everyone else thinks, but I think I'd certainly appreciate that. Thank you.
We have done member grants training, but we can look at doing it again for people that would like a refresher on it. As I say, the guidance notes and the feedback we get is very positive with people understanding where they sit. Some people, just so you know, in the process and the run-up, we've got a job share with two VCS development officers who run and have done online versions of a sort of grants application surgery. And that's proved really helpful for people just to talk through about how to strengthen their applications. So we do offer an awful lot of service. So if you are in a position where we can look at the training, but I would hope that everybody is aware, because the VCS development officers have been presented as well in terms of the things. So I sit on many district things, and we're the only place that offers that. We're the only place that has the VCS development officers, and where an application doesn't meet the criteria, we can nip it in the bud without wasting somebody's time where possible. We will always get people that ignore all of that and just submit on, you know, midnight on the day, and we've never seen them before. So we really struggle with that, and they invariably, they're quite poor applications because they've not looked at the criteria. And sometimes we get a lot of people that apply from, you get people that are recruited as fundraisers, and they'll sit in a room in Scotland applying for an organisation at every locality possible. And again, you can tell it's just cut and paste, and we do get cut and paste applications. But for reassurance, we do, as much as we can handhold people through it, we give them every advantage of trying to make sure the application is appropriate. And one of the questions, just while I'm on that, that's come up from Cabinet on a number of occasions is, what do we do with the people we decline? And again, just to reassure you, we approach them, we let them know all the stuff that's available, and where relevant, we'll signpost them to other funding. And again, they get supported on those applications, and we've had a couple of very successful applications with Lottery, but also the Community Foundation and other sources. So BIFA, you name it, so they've got a whole plethora of things that they do, but it's not just saying apply to all these people, we will signpost some things in their application. But we do say, in terms of the scoring, you need to strengthen your strengths and really show what you're delivering against that, because you might find that you're not really delivering against something else, but you won't be penalised for that, because very few applications will cover everything that meet the criteria. So it's been looked at again, and we've tried to make it as balanced as possible. And again, it's a panel that all score independently and come together as a panel, so everybody scores independently using the same criteria as well. So
is that Tina Robinson from Cornwall?
Yes,
very helpful.
Yeah, I've never actually spoken to her, but Tina. Yes, they are. And but do you actually have people coming back to you the next year after they've learnt that they were refused the first year and they've gone back and tried it again? And
yeah, we've had a few of those, and sometimes it is new groups that have just sent in an application because they've seen it come up on things. And the second time we have supported them. So last year, I think there was on the one of the grants was the windsurfing club at Wanlip.
Oh yes.
So just they put an application, but it didn't meet the criteria, and they tried to shoehorn. That's the other thing we're trying to stop people doing, is shoehorning something because it won't score highly enough. And some of those have been declined in this instance, but there is support. You know where we think.
Thank you, Chair. Also, going to tell us kind of scoring matrix, where essentially you get a threshold to go above, and then they get recommended for acceptance. What I'm trying to understand is there is a finite pot of money available. what happens if you get a surplus of excellent grant applications that are really high scoring as compared to what actually you can actually afford to fund? What's the process if that happens? So it's immovable, you just move the boundary.
Okay.
And you'll see in the report, sorry I'm stepping ahead, that I might as well pull it forward. We had some contained funding and Serco funding, so the Serco funding, Serco no longer are contributing that, so for the number of years Serco gave a £30,000 grant for that they asked us to disperse for environmental projects. That stopped for obvious reasons, I think to do with contracts and stuff, but we had a project that, due to the pandemic, couldn't go ahead and was time sensitive, so that money was refunded and we've managed to reallocate to get that back to zero. The contained funding, which I'm not sure if you're aware, is the government funding that came into Leicestershire and was distributed, and some of that is still available, and we felt it was appropriate for this time only, given there were some really good projects that we wouldn't have otherwise funded, that we diverted some of that funding to there. It's not something we'll have the luxury going forward with, but as a panel we were really delighted that we could, because there could have been four projects that we wouldn't have been able to fund otherwise.
Thank you. Councillor Parton. Sorry, a quick follow-up.
Sorry.
It's just that, because I know that when scoring things, you always like to be as objective as possible, but the reality is when you have a situation like that, there's suddenly an excess of excellent applications as opposed to funds available. And is there opportunity to rescore? You know, because it's a conversation, and when suddenly you realise, we can't do all this. Is there an opportunity to revisit some of that? Because sometimes you do have to rethink and then argue and amongst yourself and say, actually, maybe that is a more important project to fund, even though it might be just a bit lower score than that one.
Yes, so that's why we have a panel meeting. So it's not just scoring, we have a panel meeting. And sometimes we've asked for additional information that isn't always available. So when panel members are individually scoring, there might be a few questions and queries that we then get additional information. Sometimes it's timely, that means you can review your score prior to panel. Other times it means it's presented in panel.
Councillor Pond.
Focusing on the organisations that haven't been successful, there are a lot of very worthy causes that most of the public would recognise, like for example the Wellbeing Project and the Love for Life. But there's two big charities here that have been declined, there's the Bridge and the Falcon Centre, and it's when thinking about how the public would look at this, they would see the greatest of respect, this will sound harsh, please excuse me. They'll see the camera club in Alberscombe being granted money, but not the Bridge or the Falcon Centre. So, at what point did the VCS workers work with them to the point where they said, you need to change the application to this? Or was it a case of they were determined to submit in their current form? Because the feedback is, especially in the Bridge, it's not particularly, it's quite, there's quite a lot of negativity that the application simply wasn't good enough. So at what point did it fall down where there was no more you could do?
It just didn't meet the criteria, and it wouldn't have met the criteria. So it's not a community building. it's an opposite for them to deliver their services out, and they get some clients going, but it's not a community building nor is a Falcon Centre. So they weren't serving the community, and these are community facilities and community grants. So they were aware of it. They're big organisations, and they have applied for stuff in the past. They were, when they spoke to us about applying, said, you know, you've got the guidance criteria. If you've got any concerns and questions, let us know. So as two organisations that I work really, really closely with on a daily basis and have supported in a number of guises, the bridge in particular isn't a community building. It's not offering community offering stuff to the community. It's delivering its commissioned services as a charity. So that's the criteria. So otherwise, things like Rainbow's Hospice and other places where there's all sorts of different reasons why we wouldn't fund them. Steps, in when we've had Steps at Shed, we've done a small bit of funding, but because they have people from all over the country, it's limited on what is Charnwood. So we are the custodians of the money to a certain point, and we have to make sure it makes the best sense for everybody in terms of the community, and that's why the criteria sit there. And both organisations didn't meet that criteria.
I must admit, Councillor Parton, it took me a long while as being a new councillor to get my head around the fact that they wouldn't give me anything for Thurmaston Scouts. You've got a mix of all types of people, all ages, all abilities, all races, and I could not think of an organisation that's more encompassing than they are, that they come under one umbrella. And it took me a long while to understand that and not stamp my feet and say, well, that's not fair. They come under one umbrella. But what they've started doing now is opening up in the day and having play groups there, so that they are more attractive to the community they serve, not to the scouting community. So you need to look at a wider... So yes, I mean, the staff, I did stamp the feet. So any other question, Councillor Parton?
You mentioned the word shoehorn. So for example, continuing that example, could either of those two then said, well, we'll apply for funding for this, which would have then freed up some of their other money to pay for those specific schemes whilst they were able to still apply for something? Is this what scope have those two organisations, for example, got to apply for money from Charnwood?
If you look back, they've been successful in applications quite a lot over the years, so it's not that we've never funded them. Falcon Centre have had they've had shower rooms and different things, and the bridge obviously didn't need premises stuff, but had a service level agreement through different funding from the organisation. But where there have been projects, they have had funding in the past. It literally, the criteria that they didn't meet with their buildings because they weren't open to the public in both instances.
The final thing I'd like to say is a point, and this will seem harsh. The way that the report is written, there's an example here of point 27 where it says the application was low scoring, and it says, and therefore did not really meet the criteria of the scheme. One way that could be worded is that this application didn't meet the scheme on conditions 2, 3 and 4, which would be able to assist the charities to know the reasons why they'd failed. They might probably have known that from conversations, but if someone just picked up the report, they would be able to say it failed on number 2 or number 3, rather than something that's quite subjective.
To bring a level of objectivity.
I think that's point, but as an officer writing this report and the amount of detail that we have to go into, we have to draw a line at where we can do it, and we would speak to those organisations individually. If it's something that you want to take to Cabinet as a recommendation, then we could look at it, but I think that would just make this report so long and lengthy, and we go through it, so it's they're assessed before they come to panel, and they will make recommendations and check reasons. So there probably is some evidence to say why it's not met the criteria, but we could copy and paste, but it does make it quite an arduous process. But we could we could look at doing that, but just for reassurance, the organisations will know. Whether there's people reading this that would need that information, I'm not sure.
Councillor Harper Davis, would you like to come in there?
Thank you. With every respect, Councillor Parton, I think that's probably semantics, to be perfectly brutal. It's semantics. And the amount of time that it takes, as Verity has mentioned, for the officers to compile these reports, go through all of the grants and the process now is hard enough as it is, because we can't award as much as we'd like to who we'd like to award to. And I think just adding a different word into report for semantics purpose, I wouldn't feel comfortable asking the officers to do that, because as Verity says, I know that the officers speak to the relevant organisations to help them with their applications. I just think it's semantics. Thank you.
So it seems like there's no value in what I just said.
I think that's the operative word, the value. I can't really see the value in it. I can see it being quite onerous on the officers, but not necessarily a value on the people that have done the application, because they've been verbally handheld, spoken to, and they have a right, and they more than likely would come back the next year and correcting what was incorrect in the first place. Have you got another question, Councillor Parton, or can I go to Councillor Butler?
Well, the final point is, I mean, there are templates where you can fill them in, mm-hmm. and on a wrist, on a y-axis of the criteria with a checkbox. So that was something I recommend to you. Mm-hmm. Whether you reject that, that's your prerogative.
Councillor Potter.
Thank you, Chair. I actually want to back Councillor Potter up on this, but I wasn't going to suggest you put it to a general report like this. Perhaps on the actual application process, as it is, at the end of the application, if it is rejected, just something like a note about the criteria, just to specify it. So internally, if any of us want to find that information out, we can do. But we don't need to go to the length of sticking into a broad report. I agree with everybody else about that. However, something like a reference point, perhaps, might be quite a good thing, because if it's not already in existence, I think it's something we should be looking to do. Because if we have like a baseline level of what, you know, we're expecting bar applicants.
Are you sort of saying, I'm sorry, this this has been rejected, see note 7 and note 8, something like that?
Something like that, just to clarify the position, like on the actual application, when they get it back, they know exactly for future years, okay, well, we failed on that aspect this year, perhaps next time we can tighten up on that, the rest of it was fine, but just so they know, and we get us to look at an application as councillors, we just need to go to the wider public, it can just be just like an internal thing. Would that be all right, Ted? Do you think that's a good point?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I'm misunderstanding what Councillor Popley and Councillor Parton are suggesting, Chair, but if you look at the paragraph that Councillor Parton referred to, paragraph 27, it does, to my reading, very clearly set out why that application was refused, i.e. the application lacked any evidence that the building would be used for wider community use. I don't know how much clearer we can be than that, and I think it comes back to the point you raised. A scout building may be a very, very useful building for the scouts, but these are community facilities. utility grounds, Chair, and if they're building it open to the community, I don't know how much clearer we can be than that, personally.
Councillor Popley.
Thank you, Chair. I take on board what Mr Ward just said. It's just so that if we have the application in front of us, and a resident, say, or a charity or a group come to us and say, look, we failed on this, we need some advice. We can't actually intervene too much, but if we have a set criteria, 1 to 10, say, and then you put them under banner headers, whatever you want to call it, and then it just says under criteria 1, fine, it failed, but everything else is fine. We at least know where we stand then. Everybody knows where we stand then. It's just a bit of clarity. Like, it might be semantics, but it's just making it a bit more open and easy to understand for both parties going forward.
And that saves a tabulated form that I suggested.
Would you like to come back on that?
It's really difficult because we have to read, people write a lot in their application forms, and there's a lot of it that isn't relevant. So we look for what is the most likely thing to reject it in terms of not meeting the criteria. We're a small team, the amount of money is reduced and the capacity of the team has been massively impacted. But what the only thing we could probably do in the capacity that we've got is just to say the main thing that they've not achieved. But it does say that in most of the report. It does give you that one reason for it, which would be the key reason. There probably are others, but we try and list just one to stop making the report as onerous. So, and I wouldn't know where to put that in terms of, if it's not in this report, where would we, what would we send to you and where?
Thank you, Chair. I think it's also worth clarifying that this report is for Cabinet to support the recommendations that Cabinet being asked to make. It's not for the Scrutiny Commission. So you are being asked whether you support the recommendations to Cabinet.
Which are for those particular funds,
Chair, if you wish to, the Commission could suggest to Cabinet that, I'm struggling to know what you would suggest because I still think the reason is very clear, but you could suggest to Cabinet that the Commission felt that the reasons for refusing grants could be amplified in some way.
Councillor Popley has more than likely, and so has Councillor Parkson, had people come back to you because they've failed on that. I've got to hold my hand up here. I've not at all. You have? Okay. Oh, yes. We knew the reason for that. And it was explained, wasn't it? You explained that, the council. So, really, it's probably our knowledge that needs improving to be able to tell residents about the criteria, about the scoring. So for us to be able to do that, we probably need to be trained. And I would suggest, the information that you've got here is fine, but probably go through, if we do training, because we've got a lot of new members, go through the training using these criteria. But I think probably our lack of being able to understand, I'm going back, 10 years now, if the scouts would have come back to me and said, well, what else? We serve the whole community. But now I'm quite confident in saying, well, you don't. You're an umbrella organisation. I know it encompasses all of you, but you are one group. And it's the same as a church, doesn't it? I'm quite brave. And so I've got that knowledge, and I can answer somebody quite comfortably, and now Councillor Brooks can. It didn't come to me, it went to you, that was fine. So probably it's a lack of our training.
Yeah,
So if I could suggest that we had training in the future.
Thank you, Chair. What actually is the problem with this is the fact is I have had a couple of Alberti notes, and what I do is send them back to the officer, who is the knowledgeable officer, to actually be able to hold their hand and redesignate the actual how they put their information on paper. And I think that is what the thing is. And I agree with the Chair that maybe we should have a refresher course on how to actually advise or help. We're not there because we're not you and your team are the professionals.
Probably come up with some scenarios that you've got already written.
Am I right in that, Bernie? I don't know.
But the suggestion I'll make is if they do come to you and you want to have a meeting with us and them as a collective, so it's not you being middlemen and having another question and coming back, if you do have a scenario where the applicant feels that they still don't understand why they didn't succeed, then we would happily offer a session with yourself and them so everybody's on it, and then you could perhaps support with finding more evidence or whatever. So if that's current now after this report, I don't know whether any of the people we've declined people that will contact you following Cabinet, but if they still need some support, but we are massively open to it. The problem we've got is now we won't have another round until June next year, so it's quite a big gap. And the only reason that we've got a third round of facilities grants, just to clarify, is because there's been so many issues with people getting quotes, and they have to have three quotes, and they've just not been able to get prices or quotes or time scales. So some of the projects that wanted to go ahead wouldn't get a project going in the time scale just because of builders and developers. So we felt that we could offer that second, because the facilities grant is a rolling grant, so there is money. So that's why we asked that only for this year, just to compensate for the issues with quotes. But I'm more than happy if you've got people and you'd like, and then maybe that helps for future because you'll have more knowledge as councillor.
As with the view to what we are supposed to do, I would accept the recommendation, recommend to the Cabinet that these are passed. The grants that have been awarded are going to be awarded. What we're suggesting, what we've talked about, is something completely different. And I think that has been identified in training for later. And as we've heard, we've got until June to actually do it. And I've just caught up and read on quite a few of the last paragraphs. The panel was supportive of the project and have strong links with the organisation. So that one is supporting the application, and it's very positive. But the ones that are being refused, it's also crystal clear as why they've been refused. And the fact it's also clear that they, in some cases they can come back if they improve the application. So as for what we are supposed to be doing, I would recommend that the council to the Cabinet accept the recommendation. Show of hands? No? Yes? Ooh. There you go, I don't know whether I need to show that on this one. Ask the committee, do they still support the recommendation? Yes.
Chair, you need to ask for against the abstentions.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay. Anybody against? Any abstentions? What are you... I don't know what you're abstaining. Now, what we are supposed to be doing here is these applications.
Can I come in, Chair?
Yeah.
I agree with the premise of that discussion, but I still think there are flaws in what is being presented, and therefore I can't vote for something I don't agree with, even though I know the outline of what we're discussing. There are things in here I can't vote for, but I'm not against it in premise of obviously granting these people the applications, and that's why I can't vote for it. But I'm obviously not definitely against it, that's why I'm abstaining. I suppose, obviously, Councillor Pine might say the same thing.
I would have voted in favour of it had I seen a more different matrix-style table where we could quickly see failed on one or two, very similar to a MOT certificate that either says it passed or it failed, and it failed on this and this. So until some changes are made, because of the applications that were turned down, I'm uneasy with it.
Fair enough.
We've done this style of report for, I mean, this is how it's been presented, and we've seen that previously, so we can look into it, but it's been approved.
With respect, I've just for clarification, I've not been on scrutiny commission before.
Right, so let's just have a look at these recommendations again. So the recommendation is to enable Cabinet to consider applications received for funding in round two of the Community Facilities and Community Grants Scheme 2021-2022. So that's the whole list of the ones that have been passed, and a list of the ones that had been declined. Okay. So the reasons there are already written out. So I'm not quite sure what the abstention is against passing these. But that doesn't matter. If there is a problem with the paper, that's a different matter, I would imagine. Yes,
Councillor. Councillor Popley, you mentioned several flaws. Can you be explicit for the exact flaws, please? Because if it's an extra report for the Cabinet, we need to know exactly what flaws you're talking about.
Thank you, Councillor. It's basically what Councillor Parton said. He put it in a far better succinct way than I did. It's regarding the scoring system. But I know that it's difficult. I don't have anything against giving the money that's on the table. I'm actually in favour of, I want to see people getting awarded grants. But it's just comments such as, like, the panel of support of the organisation, however, felt the application wasn't clear and failed to demonstrate how it met the criteria of the scheme for community facility. It's to me, it's a bit vague. And I know that it might be the semantics. I might be... Can I just clarify, Chair, are we actually voting on the premise of just accepting the grants going forward, or are we voting it as a whole paper? Because that's what I'm a bit confused by. The actual premise of the grants, I've got nothing against. It's the actual paper as presented. That's what I'm abstaining on.
It is the grants. If there's a problem... Then we've pointed that problem out to Verity and to Councillor Harper Davis, that probably could come back with a refreshed or a different way that the last paragraph is written in future that might be acceptable to both of you or to all of us. But really, we are just voting on the recommendation that the panel has given to accept or decline those particular applications. Am I correct in that?
Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. to try and clarify, the Scrutiny Commission is being asked whether or not they support the recommendations in the report that's going to Cabinet later in the week. And I think to decide whether or not you do, you need to consider the report as a whole and the questions and answers that you've been given this evening. I also think it's worth pointing out that of the six members of the Commission who are here,
4 voted in favour of supporting recommendations and 2 voted to abstain. So you actually have a decision, Chair. Now, I think it may be worth trying to distill when you give your verbal report to Cabinet that the majority of the committee of the Commission members did support the recommendations. However, there were 2 members of the Commission that felt that a matrix-style summary of the scoring for each application for those refused that would be useful. I think the problem there is, and Verity may want to chip in on this, if you give a matrix instead of a narrative, you'll have no descriptions as to the methodology that's been applied, and therefore you have to do potentially have to do both, and that's going to make an already quite lengthy report even longer. So I don't know if you want to come back on that, Verity.
Slightly. Do you want to know why they've been awarded as well in the same process? Because you're only looking at the declines, but you're not asking why others, because that makes it massive, but that makes it equitable as to why people are. But that's the same reason, because they're providing it's not a tick box. You know, there's stuff that we have to tease out of their applications that just allows you to appreciate that they are saying something that you know being delivered, and there's a follow-up to this for reassurance, is that if people do get the money, we do make sure they do what they said in the application. So there is a very strong evaluation and monitoring process as well. But if you're doing it for why they didn't, but that makes it massive then, because there's so many different things. In a somebody will be really heavily weighted, and you'd have to really explain why they got it, because they were really heavily weighted to get the 5. But then you'd have to explain why they got less for another area of the criteria, but their overall score was high because it's heavily weighted. So that's where the complexity comes with this, because if you only want it for the declines or the deferred, but then that doesn't make sense for understanding. So I'm probably giving myself a really big heart, but I feel that we've got clarity. Whether we put a bit more detail in the sentence, we could do that. We could tease out the main reason why they didn't get it. Mm-hmm. Would that be an alternative as the main reason so it's written? Because we don't go into all the millions of reasons why somebody gets it as well. We just go to the headlines, because otherwise you might as well have the document.
Well, I wouldn't understand the matrix anyway. If you put that in why. Councillor Brooks.
Sorry.
Chair, to me, it sounds like they're asking for an explanation as to why they scored how they scored. But we put our trust in the officers to do that. And having spoken to the officers, when I've asked for clarity around specific applications and the detail and the work that goes into every application, I have absolutely full confidence in the officers to do that. For me, I get all of the information that I feel I need from the score that's given, knowing that they've scored it, and then the small explanation given as to why it's been declined or recommended as approved. I don't, having spoken to the officers about applications, I think there's more than sufficient information here to understand why they've scored and how they've scored. You would have to look at every single application in its entirety, and I think we're asking for far too much.
Right, can I just bring in Councillor Manson here, who requested this?
Well, you see, thank you very much. What I'm going to do is, I would say, is our chair is going to present this recommendation of the report to Cabinet. You then, Chair, I assume you will be doing a summary of the findings of the committee. So, and I think that is where it is, and I think, to be honest with you, as I said, it was a very detailed report. I've also had to have gone back to officers because of various things that people didn't understand, like Councillor Brooks has said. So consequently, it's the report I'm looking at, and that was why I wanted it here in front of us, and it's generated quite a healthy discussion. But see, yeah. Yep, but the fact is, it is actually, it's on page 16 what we're looking at, really, and our chair is going to take on board now with the clerk of the committee to actually summarise at the end of the thing here that we actually can and should bring into cabinet. Am I correct in that, Chair?
No, I'm not actually
that. Yes.
Councillor Hamilton, you've been staring at me. Did you want to come in?
I didn't want to prolong the process, to be honest. My thoughts were this is a report that goes to cabinet. And therefore, the recommendation of this committee is that it's, we recommend it. And therefore, because you give a verbal summary, it's simply highlighting that within the discussion, there was some concerns by some members about the clarity of the document, where others felt it was clear. So, and perhaps raised to cabinet a point of reflection. Do they think that it is clear enough for them? And then okay. Obviously did it that.
Thank you, Chair. I think Councillor Hamilton has summed it up very nicely there. This is a report to Cabinet. It's for Cabinet ultimately to decide whether they think the support contains sufficient information for them to make an informed decision. And I think when you do your verbal summary, Chair, it's up to you to summarise the discussion and to say that there were a small number of councillors within the Commission who felt that the report could contain further detail.
Okay, thank you. Right, so that was carried, and we're moving on now. Thank you very much, Verity, and thank you very much, Councillor Dean Harper-Davis.
Of revised licensing conditions for permanent residential mobile home sites. This is on page 66. And Mr. Poland, could you introduce the report? Does it actually matter that Councillor Parsons is not here at the moment?
Theoretically and constitutionally, it doesn't matter, Chair, but you may wish to give him a minute to return to the room if you so wish.
I will do.
Thank you, Chair. I'm obviously here, I'm obviously not
Councillor Mercer, I'm subbing for him tonight. I don't know where he is, but I'm here for him instead. So I'm going to just briefly go through this and then the details and hand over to Alison, if that's okay. So this report proposes the introduction of revised licensing condition for the permanent residential mobile homes sites in Charnwood. There are approximately 11 sites in Charnwood that are permanent mobile homes, and they do have to have, there's something that requires to be licensed. Under the Caravan Sites and Control Development Act 1960, the Secretary of State may modify standards in respect to the layout and provision of facilities. The current standard of licensing conditions are based on 1989 model standards and were approved by the Health and Housing Committee back in May 1989. And apply to licensing conditions to permanent residential sites licenses in Charnwood. In 2008, revised model standards were issued, and the council were able to consider the revised standards in relation to any new site applications since that time. However, for reasons that I'm sure Alison will mention if you're interested, we've kept the 1989 standards up to now. A comparison of the 1989 and 2008 model standards was undertaken to review the changes and assess the benefits from adopting the new standards. And the review concluded that there would be benefits in amending the existing site licences to reflect the revised model standards. So that's what this report's about. So with your permission, Chair, I will pass to Alison.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just a few points to add, because I think Councillor Cohen has covered a lot of the main crux of what the report's about. I think it's just to make it clear that, yes, the conditions were based on 1989's COVID guidance. We have got 11 sites, 10 of which haven't changed hands during that period. Only one has actually changed hands, and that was an application in 2017. And when we awarded the site licence to that site, they were based on the 2008 conditions. Now, when the guidance came out in 2008, it was clearly set out that the new standards should only be considered when applying licence conditions to new sites or those that have been substantially redeveloped. So because we've had no churn or no changes in relation to the sites, that is why there was no need at that point to change any of the conditions. And I think it's just clear, just to make clear with you, that all the licences are based on the planning applications that are given for those sites. So that sets out the number of mobile homes, the distances where they can and can't be placed. So I think, other than just to say that, as Councillor Collins has already said, that we have carried out review, we've now come to the point of where we've looked at it and it's still requiring a telephone on site. Well, there's no need now because everyone's got a mobile phone. So therefore, some of the conditions are very outdated. And just to go through and make sure everything falls in line, and to make sure that with the regulatory reform order that came out in 2005, all these sites have had to have a fire risk assessment. So it's just to bring the conditions in line with that, because what the conditions would have normally said was it's not a one size fits all. So you might say you've got 50 caravans on a site, you need to provide, and these aren't the right numbers. So say you need to provide 10 sand buckets, 20 fire extinguishers. That is where the fire risk assessments come in, because each site is different. It doesn't matter because you've got 50 caravans, you've got to have the same thing, because there could be something that you need to prevent or mitigate against the risk. So this is just to make sure we bring the conditions in line with that regulatory order. We have been doing other things behind the scenes as far as not the licence conditions, but we've had a fit and proper person act that's the part of the conditions that came into force in 2020. So we have updated our fit fee policy so we can instigate that. So we kept things moving along, but as far as an overall review on the 10 sites that haven't changed hands, we haven't. So we've now completed this review. We've done it in consultation with the fire service to make sure the regulatory reform order is covered. And then we've consulted all the site owners and the residents, and then the report provides detailed analysis and then the changes that are going to be made.
Thank you. Can I just ask you about the fit and proper?
Just making sure that the person is fit and proper to hold the caravan site license and
all right.
Run the scheme.
Okay, thank you. Right, Councillor Hamilton.
First of all, just a point of clarity. When you say permanent residential mobile home, does the permanent refer to that it's a static mobile home, or does the permanent refer to that it's the primary residence of an individual as opposed to a vacation home?
Yes, it is the permanent residence of that person.
Right. And if a license is granted to these sites, is there a distinction in mobile homes that are for temporary vacation purposes and those that are actually meant to be the primary residence?
There is a distinction. There's touring site license, there's holiday licenses, and then it's a residential. There are distinctions.
So a person could have both. I'm just thinking of one of the caravans, I believe it's, I think people do live there permanently, but also think people have them as holiday homes on the same site. So they will have two licenses there.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
Councillor Paul.
Please forgive if some of these are stupid questions. I'm not sure whether that Councillor Hamilton's question included this, but sometimes in permanent traveller sites there are static homes, so that they come under these rules, do they?
Permanent residence sites for travellers are normally provided by the county council, and then there'd be a tenancy arrangement with the county council, so this wouldn't cover those,
right.
Because it does list the caravan sites that are covered by this on page 69.
No, that's fine. It's just only that there was one being proposed for the Downing Park development. This is going to sound like I'm going back to wording again, but could you just clarify what you mean by a road should be maintained in a good condition? Because obviously, what's good condition?
Well, good condition would be so that they're drivable, because it depends on the site and the location and whether it's a gravel road or whether it's actually a tarmac road, so again, it would be dependent on the site. But it's making sure there's no big potholes or sinkholes that people are just going to disappear. That's probably overly dramatic, but it's making sure that people can travel around that site safely, that people aren't going to fall and hurt themselves.
Yeah, and I mean, there's things like point 7 about vegetation, maintenance of common areas, trees, of course. Presumably, if trees in the parks are ones that would require planning permission for tree work or removal, that they would have to go through the usual channels.
Yes, they would. That's why we mentioned that subject to necessary consent.
Yeah.
So if a tree's got an order on it, then we can't say to a caravan site owner, take that tree down,
mm-hmm.
because obviously we'd be going against an order from another part of the council.
And the second penultimate question is, works on drains and sewers should be carried out mainly by persons who are qualified in a particular type of work. How does the council know that somebody who, I mean, obviously, you know, we can't be there all the time. How do we know that the person that owns that site has just got a friend in who just happens to have running equipment?
Well, if something is reported to us or we make a site owner aware of the work that's required, we would then go back and make sure the work has been done in the right way and it's been done by somebody that is qualified to do that. And I think when you look at, this is in our private sector housing enforcement policy, we have got within here the action that we can take where things aren't met, if there is a breach in the licence conditions, we can serve enforcement notices. So we deal with it like we would do with any issue that's raised in a house within a normal street.
The last question, I realised that you'd answered it, was to do with, I was fascinated really about the separation gap that you kept referring to, but of course that's more to do with fire, isn't it, than just privacy. It's to answer the fire break, isn't it?
Yeah, well it covers both really, because that's why we said about with the porches, etc. There will be some people that have got porches and just need to make sure that they're as safe as they can be until they're replaced, and then we need to ensure that they meet the requirements within the conditions.
Thank you. Can I just clarify for me? Obviously, you know, I've got two of these sites in my area, and this is the new standard. So all of, say, the ones in my area, or all of the 10, because it's only the 11th that's new, are they not subject to this?
Or once this is approved by Cabinet, all of them will, because that's why we have to do the consultation. We have to do up to 28 days consultation, but within 6 weeks. And we also have asked for an extension of time to make sure we've got all the comments and concerns in relation to them, because that is part of the legislation. We'll all then be issued with the new site conditions, and we aim to complete that by March 2022. Because again, we've got to go through those discussions all around the sites and go through it with each of the owners. So
I hope that's what you were going to say, but when you said at the beginning with 1989,
well, I think it was just trying to make it clear that the main drive of the guidance was you have regard to it and do it with all new licenses. We don't have that one over that period of time.
And what teeth have we got?
Teeth? Well, in relation to the licence conditions, obviously, if they don't meet it, then we can go down the enforcement route.
Right, okay. So you will mediate with the site manager?
Yeah.
Or the site owner?
Sorry, yes, you are.
Yeah.
It will always try to work with any enforcement action, which is very wide enforcement.
Thank you, Chair. Just a really quick question, Alison. On page 71, it refers at 3.4, there's only 6 responses. Is there 6 responses across all the sites? And if so, that seems a very low comeback. I presume it's quite disappointing for you, wasn't it? You only got 6 people actually bothered to reply, potentially. Thank you.
I think in some respects, yes, it could be disappointing, but the fact that there's other, like the regulatory reform order and all other legislation in place anyway, some people might have thought, well, it's something we're doing already, so therefore there isn't maybe a need to respond to it, because it's just trying to, like I said, pull the licence conditions in line with all the legislation.
That's fine, Chair, just on that, really. And I say, just one follow-up. Has there been, obviously not on this particular model, but when you obviously talk about this, when you do site inspections, are similar studies carried out or consultation processes with the tenants, so you can sort of see what's going on the ground, perhaps?
With the mobile homes, we would only obviously do the consultation as and when required, but we do the annual inspections where we do go through all the licence conditions and check all the sites against those.
Thank
you.
Right, that's it. Is there no more further questions? Right, thank you very much. So I want to ask the committee if they support the recommendations set out in the report to the head of strategic and private sector housing on page 6 of the agenda by raising your hands, please. That has passed. Thank you very much. And thank you for being patient, Alison. And it has reminded me, so I will email him tonight. Oh, thank you very much. Always an exciting moment. Sorry, Councillor Poland, I'll be missed of me. Thank you very much for your time as well.
Always.
Thank you. Thank you. Right, item 9, pre-discussion decision. Let's do that every time. scrutiny, cabinet responses at page 108. Ask the head of strategic support to introduce the item.
Thank you, Chair. So this is just a report.
Page 108.
For information on the decisions that Cabinet made in response to the reports that the Scrutiny Commission selected for Cabinet pre-decision scrutiny at the prior Cabinet meeting, really just asking the Commission to note the report. Chair, thanks.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Progress with panel work, which is 110, please. Again, thank you, Adrian.
Thank you, Chair. So this is a report summarising progress on the various scrutiny panels that the Commission have asked to be set up. So very, very quickly, it's all set out in the appendix, but the Budget Scrutiny Panel is now underway. The Waste Management and Recycling Panel is now underway. The Digitalisation and Transformation of Services is scheduled to start early in the new calendar year. The Combating Loneliness Panel, we are waiting for Councillor Parkins, the Chair, to complete the scoping document. That will then come back to the Commission to be approved. The Promoting Tourism in Charnwood Panel, again, is scheduled to start early in the new calendar year. And the Crime, ASB and Youth Crime Panel, again, is scheduled to start early in the new calendar year, but following the sad passing of Councillor Bolton, Chair, obviously the Commission will need to identify a new chair for that panel. Thank you.
Councillor Hamilton, I'm going to ask because she was, Jill was a Labour, whether any of your members would like to take the chair of the panel for crime and
ASP. Thank you, Chair. I can take that back and find someone and report to the SAP.
Okay, thank you very much. If you could get back to us if you've got any takers. Councillor Parkinson.
Yeah, there was a comment that I were waiting the scoping document, the loneliness I've submitted.
I think to have a meeting with. That's it?
The carriage.
So that meeting from the.
Sorry, Chair. The report says the Combating Loneliness Scoping document is still in progress. So Councillor Parton may be right. If that's been submitted, it obviously needs to be considered and then brought to you for future approval at the Commission.
Yeah, it was submitted because at the previous meeting you commented that you'd read it.
Yeah, a very in-depth one, scoping document. Right, so I'll talk to Karen about that next time. So, thank you very much. Right, we've got the scrutiny work programme, and that's in 117, page 117.
Chair, again, this is really another information report, keeping the Commission as the lead scrutiny body informed of the work programme of the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee. And again, really for you to note, Chair, unless the Commission has any queries or things that they think the other committees should be looking at. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions on that one? No? Right, so next one is 122, and that is the Scrutiny Commission Work Programme.
Thank you, Chair. So this is the Commission's own work programme for information as it currently stands. And as usual, you have the current key decision notice summary setting out future key decisions that will be going to Cabinet over the next few meetings, and you may... Again, as per usual, if there are any items listed as going to the next Cabinet meeting, whether you want to select any of those now as potential things that you would want to look at. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Well, I should imagine the commercialisation is coming here anyway. That's for December. Correct me.
programme chair, it means it's already scheduled to come to you.
Okay, so if we then pass on to the forthcoming executive key decisions. Is there anything there that the Commission...
It's probably just worth pointing out, Chair, that obviously the Budget Scrutiny Panel will be looking at the draft capital plan and the draft revenue budget. So obviously you can select them if you wish to, but they are already being subject to scrutiny.
No, that's fine. I can't, nothing actually jumps out at me from there at the moment. But as usual, Sally will send us the list through, and anybody that would like to select from that for the December meeting. Okay. We've got the local development scheme to approve a revised local development scheme so that the programme for preparation of planning documents for Charnwood is agreed. No idea what that is. Anybody?
What is that, Chair?
That's, that's March. Yeah, it's March. I didn't realise it was racing on. So probably Mary gets more information there. Right, thank you very much. So the next meeting is on the 6th of December, 2021.
Apologies, Chair.
And apologies from Chair. Have you got somebody else in?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Oh, good.
I always do.
Okay. Thank you very much. And have a pleasant rest of the evening. Thanks very much.